Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today. What do a drunken man in the moon, Frodo's accidental disappearance, and Tolkien's obsession with unwords have in common? They all collide in the unforgettable events at the Prancing Pony. Unravel the humor, irony, and literary brilliance in one of Middle-earth's most pivotal chapters. Today we're diving into the final moments of the chapter At the Sign of the Prancing Pony from J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth. Don't forget to visit ringspodcast.com/pony to grab my free review guide for this fascinating chapter. And before you go, tap that subscribe or follow button so you don't miss out on any new episodes. And be sure to share this episode with a friend of yours, perhaps someone who wouldn't be ashamed to sing a song with you at the Prancing Pony. Now, let's wander. Imagine you are a hobbit carrying the single greatest weapon of domination in Middle-earth. In a dimly lit, noisy inn common room, you suddenly find yourself directing attention away from your friend, who is telling a story about your eccentric uncle and how he vanished from his own birthday party. So you decide to sing, and you sing about the man in the moon getting drunk. But there's more to this silly song. It has its roots in one of Middle-earth's deepest tales. What's the connection between this bar song and the legendary Trees of Valinor? Let's find out. Frodo and his friends are in the common room of the Prancing Pony in Bree. Pippin has just started to share the story of Bilbo's vanishing trick from the long-expected party 17 years before, and in an effort to turn attention away from Pippin, Frodo jumped up onto a table and started a speech. But the crowd soon chants for Frodo to give them a song. So Frodo begins the first song that comes to mind, about the man in the moon who came down to drink at an inn. Before Frodo sings the song, the narrator gives a little clue that taps into a wider Tolkien theme, quote, "Only a few words of it are now, as a rule, remembered." Now, you might breeze past that line and not think anything of it, but Tolkien insisted that his imaginary story actually happened in our world, and that little pieces of that far ancient history have carried over into our time. And a great example is this silly song. In our world, the words go something like this. Hey diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such sport, and the dish ran away with the spoon. It's a short nursery rhyme that has its origins in at least the 16th century, according to Wikipedia. That century would be the perfect timeline for Tolkien, a medievalist and philologist of Northern European languages, to pluck from our real history's rhymes and ask himself, where did this come from? Could it possibly be a condensed version of a much older rhyme? And if so, what might that longer, more ancient verse be? Hence we get the Man in the Moon song. The words are attributed to Bilbo, which the narrator reminds us that Bilbo was, quote, rather fond of and indeed rather proud of. So this is insight number one from this song. The Lord of the Rings takes place in the history of this our world. And Tolkien likely used his professional expertise to add some depth to the children's rhyme. The song was actually used by Peter Jackson in the films, though not in the actual Lord of the Rings films, but rather The Hobbit. In the extended edition of The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, Beaufort sings two or three verses of the song after jumping on the table at Elrond's house during dinner. The dwarves throw food at him, while Gandalf strongly suggests that the dwarves are somehow quite cultured. It makes for a decent laugh scene, even if it does carry forward the stereotype of dwarves as comic relief, and breaks the lore of Bilbo having composed the words. But in another way, using the song in the Hobbit film parallels Tolkien's own use of the song in The Fellowship of the Ring. Tolkien actually published a version of the song in 1923, decades before Fellowship was published. Tolkien returned to his own writings and reworked them for the context of The Lord of the Rings. But there's something more in this song that ties back to the deeper, mythical past of Middle-earth. It's fairly obvious that the moon in this song is connected to a man or male, yet you might miss how the sun is referred to as a she or female. Why would this be? The answer is found all the way back in the first age of Middle-earth, in tales that were recorded in Tolkien's The Silmarillion. One tale provides the origin story of the moon and sun. In Tolkien's cosmology, the moon and sun were not the primary or even first sources of light for the earth. Rather, they are derivatives of even more ancient light sources. In the blessed realm of Valinor, far in the west, two trees provided the light, Telperion the Silver and Lorelin the Golden. If you've seen the first episode of Season 1 of Rings of Power, you've seen an on-screen portrayal of these trees. Telperion was referred to as male, and Lorelin as female. However, these two trees were destroyed by Morgoth and one of his allies. In the ensuing darkness, the Valar, or powers that govern Middle-earth, were able to salvage a single silver leaf from Telperion and a single golden fruit from Lorelin. These they fashioned into lamps that were to be carried in the sky. The spirit chosen to navigate the moon was Tilion, a male spirit, and the spirit who sails the sun is Arien, a female fire spirit. So, to recap, silver tree, male, spirit who flies the moon, male, hence the man in the moon, and golden tree, female, spirit who flies the sun, female, hence the sun is a she. If you would like to wander further into those tales, you can find them in Tolkien's The Silmarillion. Plus, I have links to past podcast episodes breaking down those tales in detail, which you can find on the Wander Farther chapter guide for this chapter at ringspodcast.com/pony. Frodo's song may seem like a lighthearted distraction, but it carries echoes of Middle-earth's ancient myths and even our own world's nursery rhymes, from the man in the moon to the destruction of the two trees of Valinor. This seemingly silly tune is steeped in Tolkien's deep lore. Frodo wants to merely distract the crowd at the Prancing Pony, but instead he vanishes into thin air, repeating the very trick that made Bilbo famous. His harmless song turns into disaster as Frodo accidentally vanishes in front of the crowd, drawing the attention of spies and strangers. Strider's mysterious reaction suggests he knows far more than he's letting on. What does he already know about Frodo and the ring? We arrive at the great moment of irony in this chapter. Frodo does something far worse than Pippin ever could have. He vanishes after his song. Literally, vanishes. Let's compare this moment to Bilbo's vanishing at the party, the story that Frodo was attempting to avoid. At the party, Bilbo is also giving a speech, although his was more prepared than Frodo's antics at the inn. Likewise, he had been playing with the ring in his pocket during the speech, but deliberately, quote, slipped it on his finger. As he does, he vanishes, but Gandalf also adds a little flash of light. The Hobbit's reaction is to sit back, quote, speechless, and react in only the way that one gross of hobbits could, asking for more food and drink to be spread around, and criticizing the joke as being in poor taste. At the inn in Bree, the hobbits react in much the same way. At first, they are speechless, but here's the difference. The hobbits at Bree are not Bilbo's close relations and friends. They are strangers. So they treat Sam and Pippin with suspicion, putting distance between them and the unfamiliar hobbits. The Breelanders struggle to explain to Barlaman what they saw, or rather, didn't see. A man named Mugwort gives perhaps the least helpful claim, quote, I saw what I saw, and I saw what I didn't. But it gets worse. There's more than hobbits in the crowd. There's big folk who seem to be spies for the enemy. One looks at the traveling hobbits with, quote, a knowing and half-mocking expression that made them feel very uncomfortable. The only person in the room who is surprised is Strider, still sitting in the corner. Perhaps it's for that reason that Frodo invisibly crawls back to that corner. It's calm and dark. Strider's reaction is much more stoic than everyone else's, but he does reveal that he actually knows who Frodo really is and what he really carries. Quote, worse than anything your friend could have said, you have put your foot in it, or should I say your finger. He then gives perhaps the greatest understatement in all of Middle-earth. He says he wants to talk to Frodo about, quote, a matter of some importance to us both. Some importance? For each of them, their quest together will be the most important thing that either will accomplish. So what happened? The only way that Frodo can explain it is that it's as if, quote, the ring itself had played him a trick. Perhaps it had tried to reveal itself in response to some wish or command that was felt in the room. Yes, the ring has a will of its own. It wants to return to its master. It can sense that servants of its master are near, and so, quote, somehow it had slipped on his finger. I'm reminded of other instances of when Bilbo put on the ring and when Frodo was tempted to put on the ring when the Black Riders were near. The act of slip it on seems so innocent, so justifiable. But putting on the ring is never undangerous. It is a slippery slope from which few have or can survive. Hence why Gandalf and others, as we shall see, are so hesitant to even handle the ring. The potential power might be too great to deny after simply slipping on the One Ring. But at any rate, this vanishing story at the Prancing Pony was an accident, and while Frodo may have escaped relatively unscathed, he has put his mission and his friends in greater jeopardy. I have one more insight from this chapter I want to share, Tolkien's unjoke joke. We'll get to that right after this break. The countdown is on. Holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. I discovered their literary clock, which tells time using quotes from classic books. Thousands of options, one for every minute. It's clever, personal, and perfect for the book lover in your life. And because my family always breaks out board games during the holidays, I ordered a wooden code breaker game and a murder mystery jigsaw puzzle. Can't wait to solve that one together. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. When you shop, you're supporting small, independent artists and makers. And with every purchase, they donate $1 to a nonprofit partner. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/LOTRpod. That's uncommongoods.com/LOTRpod for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card, and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today. Unmoved, unnoticed, and uncanny. Tolkien's clever use of unwords in this chapter is no accident. From Tolkien's unfortunate mishap to Strider's unsettling calm, these subtle word choices echo a literary tradition from medieval and old English poetry. But the secret behind this linguistic pattern lies back in Tolkien's love of ancient story traditions. If you read this chapter carefully, you'll notice that Tolkien seems to deliberately use a particular prefix for several words. Un, as in U-N. Particularly, there's a cluster of these words right towards the end of the chapter, after the accident with the ring. Here's a few of the un-words that I have found in this chapter. Unknown, uncomfortable, unmoved, unconcerned, unnoticed, unintentional, unfortunate, underhill, uncanny, understand. There might be a few more, but those are what I found. Why is this important? Tolkien was a philologist and expert in medieval and Old English literature. In such literature and poetry, a common device is alliteration, or the repeated sound of consonants, and its cousin device, assonance, the repeated sound of vowels. Tolkien's use of all these words, and especially the tight cluster near the end, is a nod to that historic literary device. There's a few more in this chapter too, like Barleyman Butterbur, The Man in the Moon, Diddle Diddle Silver Spoon, and even in the title of the chapter, At the Sign of the Prancing Pony. But I think there's a deeper layer of meaning. In the lore of Middle-earth, physical beings dwell in the seen world. Alongside and in the same plane as the seen world is a spiritual world, the unseen world. And remember the climactic, dramatic event of this chapter? Frodo accidentally slipping on the ring? Doing so would essentially make him unseen in the seen world, and seen in the unseen world. Is Tolkien, in a clever and maybe deliberate way, subtly hinting at Frodo's future? This won't be the last time he puts on the ring, but it may have been his first accidental step into the unseen world. But if that's not enough, let's take the unwords one step further. The prefix un, in our modern language, means a contradiction, a reversal of the meaning of the word. Now, this doesn't work for all the unwords that Tolkien wrote here, but phrases like unknown powers and purpose, trying to appear unconcerned, Strider sat unmoved, or quite unintentional, a most unfortunate accident. In all these cases and more from the chapter, the opposite meaning of the word is what we are supposed to read, or rather, the word itself has been inverted, not unlike Frodo's hope in diverting attention away from the vanishing story. He had hoped to distract from Bilbo's tale, but ended up doing something far worse. His intention had been reversed. He was trying to remain undercover, but ended up being the central actor in a new wild tale. His hopes had become undone. Even in the smallest of word choices, Tolkien is telling his story. When you or I read this story, our minds may not even pick up on these tiny literary clues, but even these overlooked details prepare our minds to engage in the story, so that when Frodo's accident does happen, and the entire setting of the chapter becomes reversed, we are stunned, but not surprised. It's deliberate and powerful storytelling, even in the smallest of word choices. And that's why I believe Tolkien was a master of storytelling. What's coming up? A few of you have been asking me about the War of the Rohirrim movie, so I have a few things prepared for you there. And as we enter into the Christmas season, I have a few special episodes to share about Tolkien's thoughts on the Christ story. I would like to thank the Lore of the Rings supporters who made this episode possible, especially The Old One. If you would like to support the show, visit ringspodcast.com/member. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.
Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today.